apparently. There's a tape of the death room, the final seconds of the victim's life. And there are so many people around the world who've been imagining what happened in that death room when their own loved one was tortured to death by any one of three dozen U.S. client states over the years. I personally have wondered about two such death rooms, one in Guatemala, where a friend of mine story was she had her hands cut off, another in Indonesia, where Jafar Siddiq Hamza, my friend, had his face sliced off by the authorities who had kidnapped him. And when we found him, his hands were bound behind his back. Imagine if there were tapes of all of those events, and they were on TV every day, and we were all forced to watch them. This policy wouldn't last a year. We've got to stop it. But if you want that kind of change, if you want change on something that profound, you've got to stop the dismantling of what democracy we have in this country. You've got to stop the rise of incipient fascism. And to do that tactically, you've got to go out and mobilize for the Democrats.
We're going to leave it there, but we'll continue this conversation posted online under WebExes at democracynow.org. I'll be speaking tonight at the Murmur Theater in Brooklyn with Anna Glaser of Broad City. I'm Amy Goodman with Nirmeet Shah.
Cebu Camino Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Dia de los Muertos celebration on Friday, November 2nd, from noon to 10 p.m. at St. Andrew's Church in Portland. This is the 10-year anniversary of the celebration of Dia de los Muertos in Portland. There will be altar building, Muertos face painting, sugar skull decorating, storytelling for children, traditional Mexican food, drink, and live musical performances. Benefiting No Olvidados, a border group that is providing water out in the desert for immigrants. Again, that's the Dia de los Muertos celebration on Friday, November 2nd from noon to 10 p.m. at St. Andrew's Church, 806 Northeast Alberta Street in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Cebu Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Vote Together Portland. March to the ballot box on Thursday, November 1st from 6 to 8 p.m. at Dig a Pony in Portland. Join the Bus Project for a trip to the ballot box and a party to celebrate voting. Vote Together will meet at Dig a Pony at 6 p.m., then march up to the ballot box for red carpet voting, music, and more. Ballots are due on November 6th. Again, that's Vote Together Portland, March to the Ballot Box on Thursday, November 1st from 6 to 8 p.m. at Dig a Pony, 736 Southeast Grand Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon, bridging the gap between prisons, prisoners, and the community. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. Funerals began yesterday for the victims of the Pittsburgh synagogue terrorist attack that left 11 people killed. The killing spree has been dubbed the worst against Jewish people living in the United States in U.S. history. It has shocked a neighborhood known for its tolerance. The killer expressed not only vicious anti-Semitic vitriol, but he also implied that the migrant caravan on its way to the United States from Honduras and the help the Tree of Life Synagogue offers immigrants and migrants led to selecting that particular target. In reference to the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society based at the Tree of Life Synagogue, and also in reference to Donald Trump referring to the migrant caravan as invaders, the killer posted on his social media platform, HIAS, that stands for the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, likes to bring invaders in that kill our people. I can't sit by and watch my people get slaughtered. Screw your optics. I'm going in. Donald Trump and his entourage visited Pittsburgh yesterday. His entourage included Melania Trump, his daughter Ivanka Trump, and her husband Jared Kushner, along with his Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin. But they were met by thousands of protesters who cried, who sang, who prayed, and no Republican elected official chose to join the Trump Pittsburgh show, even though invited by the White House. Our guest is Seymour Drescher, who was on his way to the Tree of Life Synagogue when the attack happened. Meanwhile, just a few days prior to the Pittsburgh massacre, another terrorist attack, white supremacists killing two people, a black man and a black woman, outside and inside a Kroger store in Kentucky. The shooter reportedly said to a white man who had a gun at the site, quote, "Whites don't shoot whites." Our guest is Reese Chenault, a member of Black Lives Matter, Louisville, Kentucky. And for an in-depth election watch, we dig into California Proposition 10 and the youth vote. Our guests are the pastor Kelvin Sauls and Tandwe Abdullah, co-founder of Black Lives Matter Los Angeles Youth Vanguard. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. Now for our news headlines.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Eileen Alfandari. Funerals will be held today for three of the victims killed in Saturday's massacre at the Pittsburgh Tree of Life Synagogue. Melvin Wax, Irving Younger, and Joyce Feinberg were among the 11 people killed in the shooting rampage. The funerals began yesterday, on the same day President Trump visited Pittsburgh over the objections of the city's mayor and other leaders. Trump was accompanied by daughter Ivanka and son-in-law Jared Kushner, both of whom are Jewish. But local political leaders who would normally be on hand stayed away. Aside from the mayor, Pennsylvania's governor, the Allegheny County executive, and some congressional leaders declined an invitation to appear with Trump. His visit prompted a protest by hundreds who said that Trump's divisive rhetoric fuels right-wing hate violence. Josh Friedman is with the progressive Jewish group Bend the Ark, which helped organize a letter telling Trump he wouldn't be welcome until he denounces white nationalism. Friedman spoke to Al Jazeera.
He's part of the problem. He's not part of the solution. He hasn't denounced white nationalism. He hasn't treated any group that isn't like him with respect. He's mistreated immigrants, refugees, Muslims, LGBTQ community, women, people with disabilities. The list goes on and on. People of color. I can't name them all.
Donald Trump returns to the campaign trail today. He'll rally a crowd in Fort Myers, Florida. He'll be joined by Republican gubernatorial candidate Rick DeSantis and Senate candidate Rick Scott. It's one of 11 campaign stops Trump is planning to make over the next 8 days before the midterm elections. Federal prosecutors say in a new letter that pipe bomb suspect Cesar Sayoc searched for addresses of his targets online and had photos of many of them on his cell phone. The letter sent by Justice Department prosecutors to a Miami federal judge also says Sayoc began plotting the domestic terror attack in July. Ultimately, the FBI says he mailed 15 improvised explosive devices to prominent Democrats, critics of President Trump, and CNN. Prosecutors say in the letter that Sayoc should remain jailed without bail. A detention hearing is set Friday in Miami, as well as a hearing on when Sayoc should be sent to New York to stand trial. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis is calling for an end to hostilities in Yemen, where a U.S.-supported Saudi bombing campaign against Houthi rebels has caused the world's worst humanitarian crisis.
Our goal right now is to achieve a level of capability by those forces fighting against the Houthis that they are not killing innocent people. the longer-term solution, and by longer-term, I mean 30 days from now, we want to see everybody around a peace table based on a ceasefire, based on a pullback from the border, and then based on ceasing dropping of bombs.
The U.S. provides targeting guidance and in-air refueling for Saudi coalition warplanes. They've carried out airstrikes on weddings, hospitals, schools, and markets, killing thousands of civilians. The U.S. also provides many of the bombs. The strikes have destroyed infrastructure and interfered with international humanitarian aid. Yemen is suffering from cholera and malnutrition. Even before the Saudi murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi, members of Congress were calling on the Trump administration to cut off arms sales to Saudi Arabia over the carnage in Yemen. Robert Mueller's office has referred to the FBI allegations that women were offered money to make false claims about the special counsel. Mueller's spokesman says once the office learned of the allegations, it immediately referred the matter to the FBI for investigation. The attempt to spread what Mueller's office says are false claims about him appears to be an effort to discredit the former FBI director. His team has entered a critical stage of its investigation into whether the Trump campaign coordinated with Russia and whether Trump attempted to obstruct justice. Mueller's office has charged 32 people so far, with four former associates of the president pleading guilty and agreeing to cooperate with investigators. Pakistan's top court has acquitted a Christian woman who was sentenced to death under the country's controversial blasphemy law. The landmark ruling sparked protests by hardline Islamists and raised fears of violence. Pakistan's Chief Justice ordered the release of Asia Bibi. She'd been on death row since 2010. The Catholic mother of five has been held at an undisclosed location for security reasons. She's expected to leave Pakistan for her safety. I'm Eileen Alfandari. You're listening to Sojourner Truth on Pacifica Radio.
And this is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. And those of you who've been following the news know by now about the horrific attack that happened at the Tree of Life Synagogue on Saturday, on the Sabbath, October 27th, killing 11 people and injuring two worshipers and four police officers. And the killer shouted, "All Jews must die." Indeed, he repeated that many times. He also used a social media site called Gab, which is a Twitter-like social media network with a far-right and alt-right following. That has now been taken down. But he railed against Jewish Americans bringing evil Muslims into the country and committing white genocide through immigration. Now, he seems especially to have targeted the Tree of Life Synagogue because based at the Tree of Life Synagogue, they have been doing a work for quite some time with the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society. And the killer apparently posted on his social media platform that that aid society likes to bring invaders in that kill our people. I can't sit by and watch my people get slaughtered. Screw your optics going in. Now, he also clearly was making reference to Trump's term to the migrant caravan that is now in Mexico, begun in Honduras on its way to the United States. Donald Trump continues to refer to the migrants as invaders. And in the past, he has also referred to immigrants and migrants as an infestation at the border. And indeed, since his election, attacks, racist attacks and anti-Semitic attacks has risen by as much as 60%. And when he visited, Donald Trump and his entourage visited Pittsburgh yesterday, they were met by protesters. Let's go now to a clip from that, Trump's visit.
This is supposed to be a land where you feel free, feel to practice your religion, free to be who you are, and it doesn't feel that way anymore.
Suganya Samora, a first-generation Indian American, works in Squirrel Hill, where the synagogue massacre happened. She, like others in this neighborhood we spoke with today, says the president's visit is unwelcome.
I would prefer if he didn't come, because I think his message, I feel that the people that listen to his message and agree with his message is a message of hate and not of togetherness. And I don't think we should be blaming everything on Trump, because these people felt this way way before Trump, but it has emboldened them in a way that I didn't see possible when I moved here, when my family moved here for a better life.
His visit brings a mix of sadness and outrage from this largely Democratic neighborhood in this solidly blue town. The rabbi of Tree of Life Synagogue said the president is welcome, but won't attend any of his events.
Do you plan to see President Trump during his visit today?
I have no plans at this time for any involvement. My attention will be with the family.
Allegheny County Executive Rich Fitzgerald says the White House was in contact with him, the mayor, and the governor about attending an event with the president. All three turned the White House down.
All righty, and that was a clip from CNN. At the end of the day, as it turned out, the head of the synagogue, the rabbi who heads the synagogue, did indeed greet Trump and his entourage. They went inside the synagogue, where it's reported they lit a candle, and then they placed a rock, as is the Jewish tradition, on each of the makeshift remembrances, the Star of David for those killed, and they also placed a white rose for each person who was killed, and then went on to visit survivors and their families. So here to discuss with us his experience, I'd like to welcome Seymour Drescher. Seymour is a Pittsburgh resident who was on his way into the synagogue as the shooting broke out. He is also a member of the Dor Hadash group, one of the three that share space in Tree of Life. Seymour, welcome.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
Seymour, first of all, just our sympathy, our sorrow we share with you and your entire community at this horrific attack. But just tell us what happened. You were on your way to the synagogue.
Yes, it was one of the three congregations we had. This was not a prayer session, although we have a prayer session at the very beginning. It's a Torah study group, and I was driving in, and about 9:45, I pull into the parking lot just on the side of the building. And as I'm getting out, two people come moving out very quickly and waving at me to stay in the car and move. And I just didn't know what to make of it, but then somebody else comes running out and said the magic words, gunshots, gunshots, get out, get out. And so I pulled out of the garage, out of the slot, and as I moved backward, a whole line of police cars, ambulances, tactical units, and fire trucks were moving in for the event, which I fortunately escaped, but which were horrible, had horrible consequences for all those who had been inside.
Yeah, and you just really missing it by just a few minutes here. Give us your reaction here to all of this, though, because from what I've gathered, first of all, the neighborhood itself of Squirrel Hill, I read just yesterday, we covered some of this in an article written by a black man who grew up in Pittsburgh in a black neighborhood and who said he always felt so welcome in the neighborhood of Squirrel Hill, while there were other communities in Pittsburgh that were white communities that he couldn't he knew very well not to go to. And also that synagogue having, you know, had opening its doors to help for immigrants and Muslims, just to immigrant people generally, Jewish or of whatever faith, and the killer connecting that also with what he calls the invaders, referring to Trump's term for the caravan. Just your reaction to the work that happens in the synagogue and of the community in general.
Well, let me start with the community. It's this Squirrel Hill area is the most diverse statistically in the entire city. That is the mixture of people from all countries and the local community, and it is one where people feel extremely safe and comfortable. And public displays of religion are not frowned upon. They're accepted and excited, and all the festivals are festivals that can be jointly enjoyed by everybody. So that part of the community part is, I think, very clear. The people also are very welcoming, not only to the people who settle in the city, but take very very important stand on the welcoming other people to come in. The experience of having come in from persecution for the Jewish community in particular as refugees makes them very, very sensitive to all these things. There's always a sense that you're the canary in the mine, and if you smell poison, it's not going to be very long before it affects you, and probably a principal target of that. That in a nutshell is what goes on, and the Jewish community has, of course, been very active in the support of the immigrants.
Right, and how long have you been going to that particular synagogue?
Oh, about 35 years.
Wow,
it's a very interesting congregation. It has no official rabbi, although we have two rabbis who affiliate with us. One is a cantor, and are perfectly content to be part of us. And we, the ceremonies are conducted not just by the rabbis, but in fact most of the time by members of the community itself. Do it ourselves. Congregation. So there's a very clear level of democracy involved in this, and we are very proud of that.
Right. Any reaction to what happened yesterday with Trump and his entourage visit, as well as the thousands who met him singing, praying, weeping?
Yeah. It's such a difficult thing to face. I mean, if he had come without invitation and had uttered a strong statement saying, maybe he misled other people by his talk on nationalism. He could have reversed himself, but I have never expected him to reverse himself on things like that once he takes a position, because those are diversionary tactics and they appeal to certain groups within his constituency, and so that seems to be the way in which it works. But just in terms of yesterday, the whole past three days have been one of tremendous shock and depression for the community. And when I remember the most important single event after that escape from the near miss was attending the congregational meeting that took place while we were waiting for the names to come in, and what happened to people, and then they were reading off the names of the hospitalized, and at the end they hadn't named one of our people, and his wife sitting there knew that it happened, and just a huge sob came out of her throat, and I never felt so helpless myself in my life. Nothing that I could do. I had never witnessed, nor seen, or been near such a moment. And another wife wrote in the next day when we met together as a community, the community itself on Sunday, sent a little letter in and talked about she had her husband had survived, but she said, "You know what you can do for at the last part of the message, at the very end, three words. She said, I have three suggestions." Vote, vote, vote. It had been sitting in absolute silence. All of a sudden, spontaneous applause. I mean, it wasn't a moment that you'd think there'd be applause, but empowerment. So yesterday, I think it could have been, he could have turned it out a little bit to say, this is my limit. This is where I won't go. And of course, nothing. He didn't speak to anyone. This was a visitation, a symbolic visitation, and that was the end of it. And so it goes on. My own hope is that he would spend all the rest of his term carry out executive orders to change the 14th Amendment. I think that if he was all his energies in that direction, I would happily see him go about it forever, because he will do no harm. And that's what, of course, that doctor who died worked under the slogan, for the Hippocratic slogan of do no harm. And you can hardly claim that his words do no harm. One more thing I would like to say. I'm a historian, study history of slavery and abolition, and what I'm interested in most is the relationship between civil society and leadership, political leadership, in the process of ending slavery. And in, you know, you, if you look back in history, you see that there are different combinations. The most successful may be in terms of destruction, quick destruction, bloody battles and civil wars, but in fact they leave a legacy which leaves hatred embedded in it and creates always attempts to unravel that. And the other way is civil mobilization, which is peaceful, which the British represented petition after petition over 50 years. They were the largest single petition gatherers, the anti-slavery people in Britain. And slowly, surely, they dismantled the system. And all the other systems, American abolitionists, French abolitionists, accepted that as a model, even though, of course, it didn't work in the American case.
Yeah,
to be the path that was taken. Anyway, this is my empowerment is simply to go back in the past and say, look, this is the way you can choose. Can you choose one way or another way? And you're liable to get good or bad outcomes on that basis.
Yeah, and just finally, how are you and, you know, people you know and the community really holding up? You know, people are finding comfort in each other and with the level of support.
Yeah, we're mobilizing in these two ways, to comfort each other and then to get action. That vote meant was just a summary of, you know, you can't just sit there and let things happen and expect other people simply to be sympathetic, because they'll be sympathetic and the next day some new event will come. You've got to, in fact, make sure that you get out there and do what you need to do. And of course, it's not a difficult event in Squirrel Hill to get everybody out to vote. And that's what we're going to do, and we're going to go beyond the voting, of course, and hopefully there will be an audience at the top, that top part that I spoke of. If it's not the President of the United States, it'll be the Congress, or one or two bodies of the Congress, and we can move forward to a different kind of step, but to stop this, what I see as a slippage into very, very bad territory.
Yeah, and Seymour Drescher, indeed, the next segment right after this, we'll be talking about the killing by a racist of two black people in Kentucky in that Kroger store. But before you leave us, I just wanted to share with you some of what the Jewish Anti-Zionist Network, their reaction, because it really segues into our next segment. And I'm just reading from their statement in response to the shooting. It says, "We are Jews committed to liberation for all people. We are heartbroken and outraged by shooting at the Tree of Life Synagogue. Our hearts are with the Jewish communities of Pittsburgh and the many communities facing the terror and loss caused by horrendous acts of violence driven by bigotry and hate. To the people who lost loved ones at the Tree of Life Synagogue, we send our deep sorrow and grief. To those who were injured or traumatized, we send you our comfort and strength. As we mourn this horrendous act of violence against Jewish communities, we know that this is not an isolated attack, and our response cannot be isolated either. The attack on the Pittsburgh synagogue is part of the growing threats and acts of murderous violence based on white supremacy, xenophobia, Islamophobia, anti-Jewish hatred, misogyny, homophobia, and transphobia. Just 2 days ago, two black victims were killed by a white man at a supermarket in Louisville after he was refused entry into a black church." And then it just goes on talking about Jewish people who've been organizing against white supremacy, you know, et cetera, and a really very strong statement. And this is from the Jewish Anti-Zionist Network. They're based in London and also in the United States. So I thought, Seymour, to just share that with you. And we are, again, very, very sorry for your loss. Thank you.
Well, I'm not an anti-Zionist, but I wish that those words had been uttered yesterday by the chief spokesman for our society.
Right. Absolutely.
It would have made a massive bit of difference, because, in fact, obviously, this does not concern one community alone. It concerns all of us. And even the people who think they're not going to suffer immediately, you create an atmosphere in which they can become targets overnight, and deadly targets. These are not just words. And we know now that they're not just words. Civil society can create a basin for propaganda, which enables people to think they can shine by killing other people.
That's right.
The way they can prove themselves.
Well, thank you so much. And again, our sympathy to you and your community. Thank you, Seymour.
Thank you for your invitation and for the condolences for our community.
Yes.
We really feel that very deeply.
Okay, Seymour Drescher. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. And now we go on to another related item. There's been a lot of discussion about the interrelationship with white supremacy and anti-Semitism. Certainly, we saw it in Charlottesville, where Trump referred to the Nazi racist white supremacist marching as, well, there were some good people there, and they were not only shouting about white power, but they were also shouting, Jews will not replace us. So in another instance of domestic terrorism on Wednesday, October 24th, a white gunman killed two black people, Vicky Lee Jones, 67 years old, and Maurice E. Stollard, 69 years old. And this is after he tried to enter a black church. Heaven only knows what would have happened if he got in there. Then he went into a Kroger grocery store and killed Jones and Stollard. Let us go now to a short clip from CBS News on the Kentucky shooting.
A federal prosecutor said today a double murder at a Kentucky grocery store is being investigated as a possible hate crime. Last night, a vigil was held for the victims, both African American. The suspect is white. More now from Jerika Duncan.
Yeah, I'm going to go to Kroger, see if we have any victims.
When emergency responders arrived to the scene of this Kroger grocery store in Louisville, Kentucky, Wednesday.
Radio, I got victims down in the lot. Give me EMS.
Two people had already been shot, 69-year-old Maurice Stollard and 67-year-old Vicky Lee Jones. One eyewitness said the alleged gunman, Gregory Allen Bush, told a shopper who pleaded for his life, I won't shoot you. Whites don't shoot whites. Today, a federal prosecutor said the shooting is now being investigated as a possible hate crime. Police say they have surveillance video of Bush appearing to try to gain entry into a predominantly black church just minutes before the grocery store shooting. That idea stoking fears that he may have tried to carry out a shooting like the one in Charleston, South Carolina in 2015 that left 9 people dead. Bush had a criminal history that included domestic violence. In a police report, his ex-wife alleged that Bush used racial slurs with her and was diagnosed paranoid and put on medication.
Federal investigators are working with local law enforcement officials to determine how Bush will be tried in court. Jeff, the suspect, has previously posted racially charged comments on his Facebook page. He also mentioned there that he suffered from mental illness.
The investigation continues, but certainly some disturbing details.
Absolutely.
All right, Jerika, thanks.
Well, there you go. And for our regular Campaigners for Black Lives segment today, I'd like to welcome Reese Chenault, a member of Black Lives Matter in Louisville, Kentucky. Reese, welcome.
Hello.
Yeah. You know, I honestly am embarrassed to say that I did not know about these shootings until the synagogue shootings happened, because I found that it was only after the synagogue shootings that the national media started to pick up on what happened in Kentucky. But tell us the community's response to this terrorist racist attack.
First of all, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. And you're not alone. I think a lot of folks didn't know about what happened to Jeffersontown. And I think that's related to the community's response. You know, folks are mourning, they're grieving. Louisville's a city, it's a real city with lots of people in it, and suburbs and all of those things, and Jeffersontown is one of those suburbs. It's part of the metro area. But it still has the feel of a smaller Appalachian or southern town. And a lot of folks knew Mrs. Jones. A lot of folks knew Mr. Stollard, and we're grieving their loss, and folks are horrified. But I know also that folks, I think, aren't shocked. This city has a very clear dividing line in terms of one street that basically splits Louisville in half, and there's a west side and an east side. And for the longest time, no black folks really lived on the east side. And for a long time, only black folks lived on the west side. And that's mostly been the case for decades now. And everyone knows about the racism that exists here in Louisville proper. And it isn't shocking to know that someone has that hate in their heart here. I think what was shocking is how things happened and things went down. But I think what's also shocking is just, as you pointed out, just how little coverage it's gotten, and honestly, how little folks have actually cared about what's happened here.
Right. And what about just in terms of the family? Are resources being collected to assist the families? We know when someone is lost, there's the cost of burial, but there's also the loss of not only the comfort and care of those people, but also a loss in income. Are there any efforts like that going on that perhaps we could help get the word out about?
Sure. I'll reach out to some folks and find out the best way for people out of state to get involved. As I'm sure you can imagine, the different churches in the area are trying to put their heads together around it. But I know that in the immediate, folks are really just trying to deal with the loss.
Right.
I can provide you with those resources.
Yes, and we'll be glad to post it on our social media. Reese Chenault, I mean, you mentioned what happened in Charleston, the shooting inside the church there. Just the context for us, I mean, within the context of what happened in Pittsburgh, and not only members of the Tree of Life Synagogue, but residents in Squirrel Hill, Pittsburgh, and other people making the connection with white supremacy and anti-Semitism. And just your reaction to these two things, I mean, starting with white supremacist attack, really, against that law, where these two black people lost their lives, and then what happened in Pittsburgh. Any thoughts on that?
I think for us it's really clear. There was nothing more telling than the white man in the parking lot who was actually carrying a weapon on his person. And the attacker said to him, you know, whites don't kill whites. I think white supremacy's connection in both of these cases is clear. I think what we need to be careful about as two communities that are under attack is that we don't let the thin line between us in terms of what is a community that has a connection to this racist history in one part of the country versus the connection in another. PA, you know, Pennsylvania has its own very deep history with racism, lots of different connections that can be pointed to there. And even though it's not the same as Kentucky, you know, the relationship to white supremacy is the same. And so we have to remember each other. I was really heartened by your previous guest by his connection that these things are happening everywhere, and they're affecting both of us. They might be affecting us in different ways, but they are affecting both of us just the same. And we can't forget each other, especially in these moments.
Absolutely. Well, Rishino, thank you so very much for joining us. And we look forward to getting information from you so that our listeners will know what to do to support your work of Black Lives Matter in Louisville and to support the families. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Yeah, we want to thank Black Lives Matter LA, in particular Dr. Melina Abdullah. We partner with Black Lives Matter LA for our weekly campaigners for Black Lives. We are going to take a short station break in which we are going to be honoring those who were killed in Kentucky, in Jeffersontown, Kentucky, as well as at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Okoloka o pepe kukulu Awo pepe kukulu Awo pepe kukulu Yangboku
And that is the morning song in the tradition of Sojourner Truth. It is Na Afriki. The name of the song is Lubu. It is sung in Dida, which is the language from the Ivory Coast, as we remember those who lost their lives at the hands of white supremacists, anti-Semites. If you've missed any part of this hour from 10 this morning for 90 days after that, just go to kpfk.org, scroll down to archives, click on Sojourner Truth. You'll be able to hear the show in its entirety, and you can subscribe for a free podcast. If you are a member of Facebook, you can like and friend us on Facebook, and we are also on SoundCloud. And today we would like to give a shout out to our SoundCloud listeners in Louisville, Kentucky, and internationally we'd like to give a shout out to our SoundCloud listeners in the Netherlands. We are now going to turn our attention to election matters. Voters will be going to the polls on Tuesday of next week. I just wanted, as part of our Sojourner Truth Election Watch, we're going to do an in-depth segment today on Proposition 10 and also on a young person joining us about the youth vote. First, I just wanted to share some statistical data with you in terms of Trump ratings, and this is from Real Clear Politics as of October 29th. Trump averaged 44% approval rating. Disapproval ratings average 52.6%. Also, in terms of the Senate races, we know that they are so critical right now, and a lot of people are predicting that Democrats will not be able to flip the Senate. But in some close watch races, like in Montana, John Tester, the Democrat, is ahead. The most recent numbers are 48% Tester, and the GOP candidate, Rosendale, 45%. So that's a plus 3 lead. So that's very, very close in Montana. Also in Nevada, very close in Nevada, they have Dean Heller, the Republican, leading that Senate race against Jackie Rosen, the Democrat. The average, Heller is ahead by plus 3 percentage points. So that is almost a dead heat. So help there needed in Nevada. Also in Arizona, Kirsten cinema is ahead, but that's just by one percentage point against Republican Martha McSally. So again, that's a one that needs some focus there. Very, very important for the Democrats for Nevada and Arizona. Eyes are also on Tennessee, where apparently Marsha Blackburn, the Republican, is ahead by plus six percentage points. In California, California, by the way, is playing a really big role this year in the possibility of flipping the Senate in the 25th district. The two-term GOP incumbent Steve Knight is polling at 48% with Democratic opponent Katie Hill at 44%. And Democrat Mike Levin is leading the polls in the 49th congressional district in California with 53%. So quite a lot there. And we want to thank our intern, Julianne Tweven, for her help with gathering these statistics. What I'd like to do now, though, is to welcome two of the guests that will stay with us for the rest of the hour. I'd like to welcome back to Sojourner Truth the Reverend Calvin Sauls, a progressive and prophetic pastor involved in multiracial and multi-faith strategies in racial justice, economic equity, and environmental sustainability. He is the former senior pastor of Holman United Methodist Church and currently serves as a city commissioner on the Los Angeles Housing Services Authority. He serves as the faith community organizer for Yes on 10 campaign. Pastor Sauls, welcome back. It's been too long.
Thanks so much, Mother, for having me. And it's always an honor and a pleasure to be with you, and looking forward to our time together.
Right, and I'd also like to welcome our youth campaigner there today, Tandiwe Abdullah, the co-founder of Black Lives Matter Los Angeles Youth Vanguard, and is involved with organizing the Black Lives Matter LA Youth March on the Polls. Tandiwe, welcome.
Hi, Ms. Margaret. How are you?
Okay, good to join. I know you are likely on your way to school. And with that in mind, actually, Pastor Sauls, let's start with you, because looking, anybody who has seen Prop 10 ads, I mean, thousands, over $70,000, I understand, has been dropped to defeat Proposition 10. And we know that it's an important proposition for low-income people, but also for renters generally. What is happening with Proposition 10, Pastor Sauls? What's the benefit of it? Who's opposing it?
Yeah, thanks so much. Let me first just start by saying I've been listening this morning, just ongoing prayers and comfort and healing, you know, to our families, you know, in Kentucky as well as in Pittsburgh, affected, you know, by this the tragic loss of life and the ongoing transgenerational trauma due to the ongoing violence of white supremacy, and also along with the reluctance of national leadership to collectively acknowledge and forcefully denounce the scope, scale, and severity of deeply entrenched domestic terror from white nationals. This continues to be deeply disturbing to us. And certainly, you know my heart and my commitment to fighting white supremacy and all forms of bigotry and racism and discrimination. So just our hearts go out, and we continue to stay focused and fortified as we march towards peacemaking, equity, and justice in realizing the beloved community. I just wanted to make sure I get that
Thank
out.
You for that, yes.
We need to do our work together. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just to say, you know, around Prop 10, in specific, but in general, you know, I heard all the statistics you mentioned about what's happening across the country. This is, you know, these are consequential times. On to Proposition 10, you said 70,000, Marvin, it's actually 70 million that's been spent to fight
Yeah.
Proposition 10.
Thank you for that. I meant more than 70 million, actually. Yes.
Yeah. So we certainly, you know, are up against, you know, some huge interests, all multinational corporations such as Blackstone and other multinational corporations, and that have engaged, you know, in the last 20 years of gaming the system to make more millions in profits, you know, on the backs of renters. And Prop 10, you know, seek to repeal the Costa-Hawkins law so that we can localize rent control with and moving towards local municipalities to expand, you know, how as a people we can democratize how, you know, in California, the 17 million households who are now going into or experiencing, you know, housing crisis, and for us it's a human crisis, for me it's a moral crisis around the fact that rent gouging continues to take place and the skyrocketing rents, you know, are destabilizing our families, making them even more and more to experience insecurity and vulnerability around it. So simply put, you know, it is to localize rent control and to expand, you know, affordability and accessibility to quality housing for firefighters, for teachers, you know, for all working class families during these difficult and challenging times.
Right. And Pastor Souls, I see that Senator Bernie Sanders has endorsed it. The actor Danny Glover has come out in full support. The Los Angeles Tenants Union, the San Francisco Tenants Union, the Union of Neighborhoods, LA CAN, the Los Angeles Community Action Network, so many unions and clergy and others. Now, we here at Sojourner Truth, we cannot officially endorse up here, but how would you advise our listeners to vote on Prop 10, Pastor Souls? Yes or no?
Of course, yes.
Yes.
And we have over 500 grassroots organizations, labor, multi-faith communities, and as you mentioned, Danny Glover and Senator Bernie Sanders. We have Congresswoman Maxine Waters, Congresswoman Barbara Lee, Assemblyman Reggie Jones Sawyer, Mayor Eric Garcetti, and the Los Angeles County Board of Supervisors, the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, the Sacramento Bee, the LA Times, and just several, you know, major folk inviting us all to join in voting yes, you know, on Prop 10. And you know, I'd like to at some point, Margaret, just, you know, talk about the facts and the fiction around what's being put out there, because what we are finding as we are engaged now in voter mobilization, there's a lot of deception and confusion going on.
Okay, let's come back to that, because we also want people to get out and vote. On that note, I'd like to, Tandiwe, bring you into this discussion, because there's a lot going on about the youth vote. Time magazine is saying that the youth voter turnout in the midterm elections could be historic. This according to a new poll. And let's just hear this short clip in the voice of youth talking about voting.
One thing that I've seen from a very young age is young people's voices are incredibly impactful and incredibly needed in the world today.
I'm from Omaha, Nebraska, and I'm 19 years old.
I'm from Miami, Florida, and I turned 18 in March.
South Central Los Angeles, El Sur de Los Angeles.
Standing Rock, South Dakota.
I'm from Parkland, Florida.
I didn't get to vote in 2016, but now I can.
I'm voting for my community.
I'm voting for the future of our planet.
For the safety of trans youth.
For people who believe in science.
To keep families together.
I'm voting for racial equality.
For those that can't vote for themselves. The dreamers, the undocumented.
I'm not voting for Democrats or Republicans. I'm voting for gun safety.
Vote November 6th.
Vote.
Vota.
Vote.
Be heard.
Okay, so Tandiwe, you are involved in Black Lives Matter LA Youth March on the Polls. Tell us about that and how people can participate.
So, right. So, an off branch of the Women's March,
called March On approached us about 3 weeks ago and asked me and some other Black youth to take the lead on this. And I thought that that was so great of them. They were definitely very aware that with all of the media and all of the coverage that's going on, we don't see that much about Black and brown voters. And so they said, hey, we want to hook you up to our resources. We want you to let us know whatever we can do to make sure that you guys are at the forefront of this event. And so basically it was entirely led and created by Black high school students. You know, on nights that we had to pull all-nighters after meetings so that we could do our homework afterwards. And so we're going to have like a great lineup. We have a lot of great speakers. Patrice Cullors is going to come and talk about our bill that's going to be on the 2020 ballot and the importance of the Black vote and the obligation that we have to vote to basically honor our ancestors. And to let us know that voting is the bare minimum, right? You can't claim to be an activist and be out in the streets if you don't even vote.
Right. And Tom Dewey, when is this event happening? I mean, I am so hoping, I mean, anybody listening, if you've never voted before, you're thinking about not voting, just get out and vote. Listen to the youth of Tom Dewey talking about just in the names of the ancestors, get out and vote. So where and when is this event happening, Tom Dewey?
So this event is happening on Saturday, which is perfect because then you can come to ours and the other event. It's going to be at Miracle Theater, and it's going to be from 1 to 5. And we're going to have shuttles the entire time that take you down to the polls where you can actually go and vote. There's going to be food. And if you actually need transportation, we have a Instagram page called We Are March On. And you DM them and say, I need transportation to come to this event, and they'll find a way to hook that up for you. But it's really just about showing folks that they have an obligation, because I can't vote, and the people who even put this event together can't vote. So this is about making sure that you vote in our names and you vote in the names of those who struggle to get you that right.
Right. Thank you, Tom Dewey. And Pastor Sauls, back to you. It's really uplifting to hear about youth involvement and pushing people out to vote. We've got like about a minute and a half or so we'll give you the last word here, Pastor Kelvin Sauls.
Yes, let me just commend Tom Dewey and our Black Lives Matter folks. I agree with them. I mean, young people will be making a difference, and we invite folks to, as they get that, you know, vote from the bottom up. And of course, 10 is at as close to the bottom. Yes on 10, and just to let folks know that, you know, Prop 10 will not drive up your rents. It will not take rental housing off the market. It will not make it harder for you to find a place to live. It will have protection for renters, for seniors, for veterans, and the disabled. There is, you know, provisions when you connect Proposition 1 to build more affordable housing, Proposition 2 to address homelessness, and Proposition 10 to limit rent increases. You know, you will see that Prop 10 is a key part of a multi-pronged solution. And so by supporting these three, you know, common sense measures, we believe that California will have the necessary catalytic tools needed to address the housing crisis, which is the most pressing problem facing our state. And it affects young people, it affects our elderly, and everybody in between, you know, that seek to live lives of dignity, security, and stability. So
absolutely,
to vote yes on Prop 10.
Right, and Tom Dewey, we are sure that you all will have information about Prop 10 and these important propositions at the Black Lives Matter LA Youth March on the polls happening this Saturday. All of that information on we'll have up on our social media. Thank you, Tom Dewey. Thank you, Pastor Sauls. We're out of time. Got a dash.
Thank you, Ms. Martin.
Okay, we're out of time. I'd like to thank our entire team today, our assistant producer, Romero Funes, our board op, Gary Baca, Julianne Tweven, our intern. Sojourner Truth will be back on the air tomorrow. Thank you for listening. This is your host, Margaret Prescott.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Here to Stay, an artist book fair the weekend of November 2nd through 4th at Matter in Portland. Here to Stay is a celebration of publication as art. The opening will be Friday from 5 to 9, and weekend events include tea tasting, book fair, art exhibition, and more. Participants include Just Seeds Artist Cooperative, Signal Fire, Eberhardt Press, Works Progress Agency, and many other artists, writers, and activists. Again, that's Here to Stay, an artist book fair the weekend of November 2nd through 4th at Matter, 811 East Burnside Street, number 124 in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is Norman Solomon saying that you're listening to non-commercial, listener-sponsored, volunteer-driven community radio, KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM.
Says Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. Monday at noon, KBOO's Joe Meyer and I walked into the Multnomah County Elections Office at the invitation of the director, Tim Scott.